is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, the TPP has not yet passed, but the TPA, that is to say Fast Track, they had to change the name because everybody knows how evil Fast Track is. So they even changed the damn name of it. And it just passed the Senate. Which means that for the next 6 years, the next 2 years of the Obama administration, and the first and the entirety of the first term of the next president, the president is going to be able to propose legislation, and as long as he calls it a trade package, and keep in mind this, the TPP has got 5, 6, maybe 7 sections out of almost 30 that have to do with trade, and the rest has to do with nailing down the rights of corporations against the rights of democratically elected governments, like ours. It just passed, and it passed with the help of 12 Democrats. It still has to pass the House of Representatives. We will see what happens there. And, Jim, you want to put the Senate number up? My radio call-in numbers have obscured my... I've got to change the... What is it, 202? Yeah, okay. We'll get to that in just a second. Let me just give you an example of what this all means. Japan, here's the headline from Reuters. Okay, yeah, if you want to call your member of Congress, now is the time to call the House of Representatives. I mean, you can call these senators if you want, these Democratic senators who voted for this, and tell them what you think. But frankly, I don't think they care. I mean, you know, when I lived in Oregon, I may or may not have. I believe I did, but I can't say for sure. I just don't remember. I occasionally contribute to politicians, and I think that I donated to Ron Wyden's campaign. I certainly had him on the show a lot, and when I was in Portland doing a local show, we had him in the studio a lot. Which is, you know, arguably supportive. But I don't think Ron Wyden needs my money anymore. I don't think he needs your money anymore. Because, hey, he's got the largest corporations in the world now saying thank you. And it's not just Ron Wyden. It's Bennett from Colorado, Feinstein from California, Murray from Washington, Nelson from Florida, Cantwell from Washington, Carper from Delaware, Coons from Delaware, Kane from Virginia, McCaskill from Missouri, Gene Shaheen in New Hampshire, Warner in Virginia, and, as I mentioned, Ron Wyden. They all just voted to pass Fast Track for the next 6 years. And so, you know, I realize in this, you know, Citizens United environment that politicians... I mean, the Republicans embraced this right off, right? 2010, Citizens United, and bang, by 2012, the Republicans were like, where are our billionaires? And you'll recall, you know, the whole Republican primary clown show, you know, it was all, okay, Shelley Adelson just decided he's going to support Newt Gingrich for another 3 weeks. Another 3 weeks, Newt Gingrich is a viable candidate for the Republican presidency. Right. And so the Republicans were the first to embrace the idea of each one of us needs a billionaire. You know, Marco Rubio's got his own personal billionaire. In fact, he wouldn't even be in the Senate without his personal billionaire. Increasingly, this is true right across the board. And now I would suggest that you've got 12 Democrats. So this is, it's creeping into the Democratic Party. You've got 12 Democrats who probably don't need your money and probably don't give a damn what you have to say. Bennett, Feinstein, Murray, Nelson, Cantwell, Carper, Coons, Kane, McCaskill, Shaheen, Warner, and Wyden. And I would say to each one of them, well, actually, let me let Ronald Reagan say it to each one of them in just a moment. Here is...
Our founding fathers... Here in this country brought about the only true revolution that has ever taken place in man's history. Every other revolution simply exchanged one set of rulers for another set of rulers. But only here did that little band of men so advanced beyond their time that the world has never seen their like since evolve the idea that you and I have within ourselves the God-given right and the ability to determine our own destiny. But freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Wow. Today is that day. Or at least the setup for that day. TPP hasn't passed, but, you know, I think we've got 12 Democrats now who are clearly in the bag for the big transnational corporations. And why would they not be in the bag when TPP comes along? Actually, they don't even need them. You know, these Democrats now can safely vote against TPP because it only needs 50. See, it took 60 votes. This was being filibustered. So by some Democrat, I don't know if it was Bernie or who it was, but somebody, you know, some Democrat was filibustering this thing, maybe Sherrod Brown. And so it took, say, it might have been Harry Reid for all I know. And so it took 60 votes to break the filibuster, which just happened this morning. So now when the bill comes up, it's only going to take 50 votes when TPP comes up. So all of these Democrats will be able to vote against it. Because there's 54 Republicans in the Senate, 50. There's more than 50, whatever the number is. And as a consequence, if you live in the district of one of these Democrats, you know, Bennett, Feinstein, Murray, Nelson, Cantwell, Capito. Oh, wait a minute. That's a Republican. Cantwell, Carper, Coons, Kane, McCaskill, Shaheen, Warner, or Wyden. If you live in one of their districts, then you will almost certainly, when the TPP vote comes up, be getting a fundraising letter or a, hey, look at me, how wonderful I am, vote for me when the next election comes up letter saying, I voted against TPP. Because now TPP will pass without, it doesn't need a single Democratic vote. There's enough Republicans to pass it. A few of the heroes of this, by the way, the people who voted no, against their own party. Susan Collins. Cantwell's no longer in the. Cantwell voted for it. She's the Democrat. Susan Collins, the Republican from Maine, voted no on fast track. Mike Lee, the Republican from Utah, voted no on fast track. Rand Paul, the Republican from Kentucky, voted no on fast track. And Sessions, Jeff Sessions from Alabama, and Richard Shelby from Alabama, the two Republican senators from Alabama, both voted no on fast track. That's pretty impressive. But anyway, here's where it goes. The headline, this from Reuters, the headline: Japan takes South Korea to WTO, the World Trade Organization, over Fukushima-related food import restrictions. Japan launched a trade complaint at the World Trade Organization on Thursday, today, to challenge South Korea's import bans and additional testing requirements for Japanese food from Fukushima. Right?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I have to share with you some of the things that are coming out of these trade agreements. Bernie Sanders just issued a statement on this. We will continue in just a minute. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Reggie in Salem, Arkansas. Hey, Reggie, what's up?
Hey, I have two questions. First one is, if these trade agreements keep passing, is there a point where we can possibly get out of them?
Any of them can be reversed in one day if Congress decides to. And that, okay. But I think it's going to take a massive economic crash to bring about the kind of political change in this country that's going to, you know, this is why I wrote the book, The Crash of 2016. If you look at the history of this country, that's what it takes to wake people up enough to get any kind of serious political action.
Well, and my second question is, what, when do we reach the point of taxation without representation?
We're there.
Because living in Arkansas, I mean, Tom Cotton doesn't even answer your phone calls. He doesn't return your calls. He's just a jerk.
Yeah.
And
he just came out and said, by the way, that the invasion of Iraq was not even a mistake. It was a good thing.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think he's got his head shook up over there.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know that we should personalize this. I just think he's another Republican who's in the bag of the, he in particular is in the bag of the military-industrial complex. And hey,
yeah.
War is profitable. And some of that profit is no doubt being recycled into Tom Cotton's campaigns or into the super PACs that support his campaigns.
Yeah, well, I wish he'd put some of it in the Arkansas economy.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen because he doesn't give a rat's ass about average people. And none of the Republicans do. I mean, it's just that simple, Reggie. It's just that simple. So, well, you know, we'll see where this goes. But today was a dark day, a bad day, let's say, for American democracy. Reggie, thank you for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Charles watching Free Speech TV in Conway, South Carolina on the DirecTV network. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Yeah, I would like to know that if the guard of the Republican Party once was a union member of the, or even maybe even a union rep of the Screen Actors Guild.
Reagan, yeah. Reagan was the president of the Screen Actors Guild in the 40s or 50s for a while.
He's a rat.
And during that time, he was secretly feeding information to J. Edgar Hoover and to Joe McCarthy about, communists in Hollywood. Yeah.
So he's a rat.
He was a rat, yeah. He was absolutely a rat.
I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
Okay, thanks a lot, Charles. Yeah, Reagan was a rat and he was a shill, but his quote about, you know, someday you will see that this was the end of, I mean, what we have done basically with this fast-track agreement is we have said, you know, the will of the people doesn't matter, Congress doesn't matter anymore, and what does matter now is transnational corporations. We are seeing right before our very eyes, and it's, I mean, this is not like the pivotal moment. The pivotal moment was back in 1992 when Bill Clinton got elected on a campaign platform of promoting NAFTA and the World Trade Organization. I would say that that was a major turning point. And this is now the subsequent, you know, follow-on to that. And where's Hillary Clinton on this issue? Have you heard a word from her? No, and you won't, in all probability. She'll wait until the dust settles. She's being cautious. I am just so, you know, screw conventional politics. We'll be right back. Okay, here's what happens when you have these trade agreements, right? This is the one that Bill Clinton signed. Again, largely promoted by Republicans, but enough Democrats went along with it. But and you could argue that back in 92, Ross Perot, who got 20% of the vote in the United States on a single issue, no trade deals, that he was sort of the bellwether. He was right, by the way. And time has proven that he was right. But you could argue that Bill Clinton just didn't know better because we really hadn't tried this yet. You know, I'm willing to cut Bill Clinton a little bit of slack on this. His wife, however, is running for president right now. And she should be speaking out on this. If she's in favor of it, she should say so. If she's opposed to it, she should say so. Instead, what she's saying is, well, I haven't seen the legislation yet, so I can't really comment on it. Really? I mean, as Secretary of State, she helped negotiate it. Anyway, this is, let me just share a couple pieces with this. This is from Reuters. It's from May 21st. That's today. Japan launched a trade complaint at the World Trade Organization on Thursday, today, to challenge South Korea's import bans and additional testing requirements for Japanese food after the 2011 Fukushima nuclear disaster. South Korea's expressed regret at Japan's action and said that its ban on some Japanese seafood was necessary and reflected safety concerns. Japan says several measures taken by South Korea violate the World Trade Organization's Sanitary and Phytosanitary Agreement, the SPS, which is part of the WTO's, you know, set of, you know, corporations around the world. You know, hey, you're just a country. Screw you. And that Seoul has failed to justify its trade restrictions as required by the World Trade Organization. So now South Korea cannot say, we are going to test Japanese fish to see if it's filled with radiation before we sell it to our public. I mean, it's not determined yet. It's before a tribunal at the World Trade Organization, but the tribunal is run. It has corporate judges. It has corporate prosecutors and corporate defense lawyers. It's a joke. It's a kangaroo court. Story number one. Story number two. This is from IB Times. And I picked this up from Cali over at democraticunderground.com. What is the real objective of TPP? And keep in mind, TPP has not yet passed, so you can still call your senators and your members of the House and say, don't pass it. And if you're calling a Republican, call it Obama trade. In fact, if you are represented by a Republican, go to Obamatrade.com and read the Republican and conservative talking points against TPP. It'll blow your mind. The vast majority of Americans don't want this. In fact, the vast majority of Americans, well over half of Americans, in fact, I've got the poll right here. Let's see here. 75% of Americans want trade that protects workers, the environment, and jobs in the United States. Only 11% of Americans are in favor of these so-called free trade deals. 75% of Americans oppose this. And yet it just, you know, the greasing the skids of it just passed the Senate. So what is this all about? Well, this is the amazing thing. This is a 400-page long report from the U.S. Trade the U.S. Trade Representative, the USTR. This is the office and person who is negotiating, is in charge of negotiating the United States position on so-called free trade, on TPP. And quoting from the IBTimes.com piece, among the highlights, these are the things that TPP will bring you. And this is according, I mean, you can read this over at USTR.gov, U.S. Trade Representative. This is the official United States government position. Among the highlights, food labeling policies, a new law in Peru not yet finalized that would mandate warning statements on prepackaged food with excessive amounts of sugar, sodium, and saturated fats. Similar laws in Vietnam and in Mexico. This is, by the way, not from the government site. This is from the IB Times, but it's all there. Similar laws in Vietnam and Mexico, the latter of which recently overtook the U.S. as the world's most obese country. Another law in Chile that would require warning icons on foods that exceed specified thresholds in fat, calories, sugars, and sodium. The U.S. Trade Representative warns as much as 80% of the U.S.'s 312 million in prepackaged food exports to Chile would be affected. In other words, our junk food manufacturing companies will be able to sue Chile and Peru and Vietnam and Mexico and say, you may no longer require us to label our products as not being healthy. Mexico now having the highest level of obesity in the world because people are moving from real food to junk food. And then, you know, it's even worse on the environment. I'll share that with you after the break, and then we'll pick up your calls. I've got, oh, and, you know, the economy, the banksters, there's so much going on. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Ronald Reagan was right. I never thought I'd say it. Well, he actually gave a good speech that's relevant today. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. They just posted over on DU the latest 2016 New Hampshire Democratic presidential primary. Hillary Clinton's at 49%. And again, let me just, you know, for the record, I will enthusiastically vote for Hillary Clinton if she's the Democratic Party's nominee. I will enthusiastically vote for Hillary Clinton if she's the Democratic Party's nominee. And that's why if I lived in for Washington State, for example, where both your Democratic senators just, in my opinion, betrayed America by voting for Fast Track, I would still vote for them because Republicans are worse. But it's a sad state of affairs when our politics reach the point where you're saying, yeah, I will vote for somebody because they're not as evil as somebody else. Or they're not evil at all. They're, well, evil is a bad word. But anyhow, the poll, Hillary Clinton's at 49%. But Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, between the two of them, are at 37%. And I would guess that anybody who's supporting Elizabeth Warren would end up supporting Bernie Sanders, because Elizabeth Warren is not running for president. 37%? It's pretty amazing. Okay. Just a couple of other things very, very quickly. The Fed minutes. This in the Financial Times today. Yesterday, Sam Fleming in Washington writing, the headline says it all. Fed minutes show doubts about strength of U.S. recovery. Why isn't the U.S. economy recovering? Why has the U.S. economy not been recovering, at least for the middle class, since the Reagan administration? Because of Reaganism. Because we no longer make things here. The only way a country can get wealthy is to make things. Manufacturing is what makes countries great. You don't believe me? Look at China. When I was in China in 1986, it was a third world country. The tallest building in downtown Beijing was the 10-story tall Hilton or Hyatt or whatever the heck it was. It was an American hotel. There were no cars on the roads. There were no shiny signs. There were no electronics. People, all the side streets had piles of charcoal briquettes or coal briquettes in there that people heated with. It was November. It was cold. It was a third world country. Today, China is sparkling and gleaming and brandy. Why? Because our jobs are there. And downtown Baltimore and downtown Detroit now look like China did in 1968 or 1986. We have simply swapped places. Why? Because Reagan started pushing through this permanent normal trade relations with China, and you know, subsequent presidents have all agreed, okay, cool, yeah, let's do this. Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, every single one of them. Sure, what the hell? Send our jobs overseas. Arizona's legislature. This over at the Center for American Progress's blog, thinkprogress.com. The headline, Arizona will boot thousands from welfare to address a $1 billion budget hole. Why does Arizona have a $1 billion budget hole? Well, part of it is that the Republicans run the state, and Republicans are stupid when it comes to economics. They totally suck up to the billionaires, period. You know, so, you know, tax cuts for the billionaires, tax cuts for the businesses. To hell with poor people. They are now time limiting the length of time that you can be on welfare to 12 months. At the end of 12 months, get a job, damn it. That's their, but ignoring the fact that, you know, the vast majority of people, well over 70% of the people who are on welfare are either elderly, disabled, or children. But nonetheless, they're saying to that remaining 30%, go get a job. Well, where are the jobs? Oh, you should move to Vietnam where the minimum wage is 56 cents an hour. We have to bring manufacturing back to this country. It's just that simple. And we just took a huge step in the wrong direction. Now, once again, just to be clear, TPP has not yet been brought to the floor to be voted on. this is fast track, and it only passed the Senate. It has not passed the House. And there are Republicans who are very, very, particularly the Tea Party conservative Republicans. Keep in mind, Rand Paul voted against this in the Senate. His colleagues in the House, the Republicans in the House, are going to vote against it, and which means that they're going to need at least 30 Democrats in the House and probably more. So now is the time to call 202-225-3121 and ask for your member of the House of Representatives. You have two senators. You have one congressman or woman. And if you don't know who that person is, and a lot of Americans don't, no shame, call 202-225-3121 to get the switchboard for Congress and say, hey, you know, I live in Connecticut. My zip code is 06883 or whatever. And they'll say, oh, you're represented by Joe Blow. Say, okay, put me through to Joe's office. Bing, there you go. And you can say, you know, hey, I understand the fast track is going to be voted on in the House probably this week, maybe tomorrow. Please say no. It's unconstitutional. We don't want Obama trade. Especially if you're talking to a Republican member of the House, call it Obama trade. Reference the website obamatrade.com. If you haven't seen it, go look at it. Tom in Edmonds, Washington. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you. I just wanted to start with one point about the language we use. Instead of talking about free trade, can we abolish that phrase and just call it a multinational corporate trade agreement?
Well, it's not just even a trade agreement. It's a takeover. What we are witnessing is the end of the nation state and the rise of the transnational corporate empire. You know, it used to be, you know, it was the French Empire, and then it was the British Empire, and then it was the American Empire, and now the Chinese are trying to make it the Chinese Empire, and because it's the transnational corporate empire, and in China they have merged corporation and state, most, you know, all these state-run industries, and even the ones who aren't state-run industries are under the thumb of the state, which is the very definition of fascism. You could argue that what is happening is fascism is in the process of ruling the world just as it rules China right now.
Can I challenge you on one point? Because I know you
please
have a lot to say against Republicans and against, you know, corporate oligarchy. But I feel like, you know, I live in Washington State. Both of my senators voted for TPP this morning.
No, they voted for fast track this morning. Let's keep that clear.
And so I just feel like, you know, if we call ourselves progressives, we have to be realistic about, you know, this is a bipartisan oligarchy that,
yes,
you know, people like Chuck Schumer, and they just play both sides.
Chuck Schumer voted no.
Mitch McConnell all the time, and it's really unacceptable. And I think what we could really use is a different attitude about Congress. We need independence in Congress. We need people who are independent.
It's not that we need people who are independent of political parties, Tom. It's that we need people who are independent of big money. And the problem is that that five right-wing cranks on the U.S. Supreme Court have established new rules for democracy in the United States that hands our democratic republic over to the oligarchs, over to the billionaires, and over to the transnational corporations who create those billionaires. And that's the cancer that's at the core of this entire thing. And that's only going to be solved when the American people rise up and pass a constitutional amendment saying corporations are not people. Rand Paul, by the way, was talking about this on the floor of the House of the Senate yesterday. Over and over and over again, he kept mentioning, well, you know, the Supreme Court says corporations are people, and that really worries me. I was ready to vote for Rand Paul, other than the fact that he would end Social Security and end Medicare and you know, close all our public schools and turn our roads into toll roads. I mean, you know, he's crazy, but he's right on TPP. He's right on TPA, and he's right on in my opinion, on Section 215 of the Patriot Act. But I don't think that this means that we need a third party, because a third party will be just as corrupted. It'll either be completely impotent if they can't raise money. This is the problem the Greens have right now. You know, they don't have billionaires. You know, most Americans absolutely support the Green Party's agenda. I'd say well over 50, probably over 60 or 70% of Americans support the Green Party's agenda, but they don't have billionaires. And ever since 1976 in the Buckley case, you know, this is all came out of the Powell memo. Lewis Powell wrote the decision, And, you know, ever since then, these are the new rules. The billionaires, it's the old joke about the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. Well, welcome to America. Tom, I got to move along, but thanks for the call. Carol in Merle's Inlet, South Carolina. Carol, you are on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Good.
My story is, can you hear me okay? I'm on a speaker.
Just fine.
Okay. My story is going to start with a rewind, and I'm going to say my parents probably are rolling in their graves in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where they were both Reagan Democrats and voted in the Reagan Revolution, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Carol, we only have a half a minute left. To your point.
Okay. My dad worked at a steel fabricating plant. It went bankrupt. It went, all that went overseas from that part of Pittsburgh.
Yep.
His pension went out the window.
Yep. And that was thanks to Reagan's reforms to pension rules.
Yeah, now I'm in South Carolina, where a fabricating plant that makes steel rods in Georgetown, small county seat in my county, is now going offline. And 260 people, 60-some people are losing their jobs. So my whole life I've seen.
Right now as we speak, Carol, those people are losing their jobs?
Yes.
Wow. Carol, thank you for calling and sharing that. That's important stuff. Thank you very much. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. I mean, this is the story of Reaganism. This is what has been going on for the last 35 years. Our country is being bled dry. Our cities are turning into third world communities. They're shutting off the water in Detroit and Baltimore, for God's sake. And we can't build a factory here?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And under these trade deals now, South Korea is saying, we would like to check Japanese fish for radiation. The World Trade Organization is saying, no, you can't. They're going to say the same thing to us. Whew. Amazing. Welcome back. Ron in Yoder, Indiana. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. I was just wondering, what can we do to wake up our government and start doing what
organize.
What we want them to do.
Organize. Organize. Go to BernieSanders.com. Go to PDAmerica.org. Go to Democracy for America. There are, I don't know that MoveOn.org has taken a position on this. The PCCC, the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. I think it's PCCC.org, but I could be wrong, but you can easily Google it. These are all organizations, MoveToAmend.org. These are all grassroots organizations where you can volunteer to help, and that can mean as little as saying, okay, this month I will make 5 phone calls, or it could be as much as this month, you know, 3 nights a week, I'm going to go out walking door to door and passing out pamphlets. I mean, you can choose the level of participation that is comfortable for you, given your circumstances, both physical and job wise and everything else and time wise. But participate, join something, get out there. You know, my tag, you're it at the end of the show. This is the time.
You're right. But I just feel that our government just don't care what we want.
Well,
it's
not our government.
What we want.
It's not our government, Ron. It's politicians who are owned by big corporations and billionaires. And they are owned by them because of a Supreme Court decision, which is one of the reasons that one of the organizations that we should all be joining is MoveToAmend.org. Public Citizen is good, too. Citizen.org. They're doing great work. I mean, there's a whole bunch of really great places where you can, and you don't even have to give them money. You can just give them a little bit of time if you're low on the cash. But there is a lot that can be done. I am not, you know, in despair at all. I think that this might be, you know, if TPP passes and suddenly Americans start seeing the trade rules really start to change and they see, you know, states that have labeling requirements for whatever it may be on their food. I mean, we just, you know, lost this case literally this week about labeling meat that comes from outside the United States. It's now illegal to put a label on it saying made in Argentina or made in wherever, Burundi or something. It's like this from the World Trade Organization. As Americans figure out more and more how badly we've been screwed, when the economy does fall apart, and it's going to, because it is a house of cards, and when that happens, there is this moment for political change, this revolutionary moment. And I'm not talking about it the way that the right-wingers talk about it, about, you know, Second Amendment revolutions, we need to go out and buy guns and all that kind of BS. It's total nonsense. I'm talking about a grassroots political movement where people just rise up and say, enough. And the next president is going to nominate at least two and probably four members of the United States Supreme Court. That can change this, but we need a genuine people's movement to amend the Constitution, to take our country back, and kick the money changers out of the temple of democracy, basically. Am I making sense, Ron?
Yeah, a lot.
Okay.
A lot of sense.
Yeah, good. Well, thank you. In Indiana, you don't have, both your senators are Republicans, aren't they?
Right.
Yeah. And your governor, boy, it's a tough one. So you know, if you've got a Republican member of Congress, now is the perfect time to call 202-225-3121 and say to the office of that Republican member of the House of Representatives, I don't want Obama trade, because that's the next vote that's coming up, is the TPP. And call it Obama trade and say, I don't want Obama trade. And, we all need to be doing this. Ron, thank you for the call. Great to hear from you. We'll be right back, 10 minutes before the hour. Yeah, here's a great welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Patricia at Noteyat tweeting, Tom Harbin, don't you get it? Republicans want President Obama to pass TPP so everyone will blame him for America's demise while they get rich. I agree. I think Obama has been suckered into this thing, but who knows? I mean, who knows? And let me say, I am not altogether cynical or despairing at all. I think that, you know, it's like the Republicans and the billionaires and the corporatists, they always overreach. Greed knows no limit. As we played that Teddy Kennedy clip yesterday, when does the greed end? It never ends. And as Americans realize how badly this overreach has happened, I think that we are on the edge of a major political revolution in this country. I think Bernie Sanders' candidacy for president of the United States and Elizabeth Warren's popularity, amazing popularity, are signs of that. And I hope that the Clinton campaign can get with the program. And if not, you know, well, we'll see where it goes. I'm ranting here. Harvey in Berkeley. Hey, Harvey, what's up?
Well, hi, Tom. You said earlier that the Trans-Pacific Partnership will be used to destroy the environment and the food safety laws. I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
Our fresh air, our fresh water gone, and the killing of our environmental laws will doom us to a life of illness and disease. For example, here in California, we have Proposition 65, and it says, chemicals known to the state to cause cancer, birth defects, and other reproductive harm are found in gasoline, crude oil, and many other petroleum products, their vapors, or results from their use. So this Proposition 65 is keeping us healthy. And it turns out that the TTP, TPP, would render Proposition 65 null and void.
Right.
And I believe that as a society, we'll never get rid of cancer until we move away from fossil fuels. But the fossil fuel industry is at the center of the TPP.
Yes.
And I think that the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, will cause a spike in public illness and disease, and it'll cost us, the taxpayers, billions and billions of dollars and run up the national
debt. This has already happened, Harvey, as a result of the trade agreements that have been passed since 1981. There's been a whole series of them, and every single one has increased unemployment in the United States, increased poverty in the United States, wiped out the middle class, and as people are poorer, they can't afford health insurance, they don't get well, they eat crap food because the cheap stuff is cheaper. You know, the fast food is cheaper than healthy food, tragically, in the United States. The food processors have figured out a way to shovel junk at us. And so, you know, we're having this epidemic of obesity and cancer and health problems in the United States. And I think a lot of it goes back to our trade agreements, a lot of it. And now we're trying to export this stuff around the world. We're trying to, you know, we're trying to sue Mexico right now to say, no, you cannot warn people against the salt, fat and calorie levels in the junk food that we're shipping down to Mexico. And Mexico now has a higher obesity rate than the United States because they have so much poverty there, people can't afford to buy good Mexican food.
I say just say no to cancer, just say no to Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah, I'm with you. Thank you, Harvey. Len in Cedarhurst, New York. Hey, Len.
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
I've been listening to the rants and watching the news, and, your concern about how to talk to people and not tell them they've been that they are suckers.
Right.
You know, it's something that's important. And I, after the last week between, you know, another banking scandal where no one goes to jail and...
no one even gets seriously investigated.
Huh?
Pardon my interrupting you. No individuals even got seriously investigated. It was just the corporation.
They know what happened.
Yeah.
And the TPP, but, you know, even more deeply wounding me. I mean, he was talking yesterday in front of the Coast Guard, talking about climate change being a serious threat. And at the same time, they give Shell the right to go drill in the Arctic.
Right.
After I would say, you know, this was probably the worst week that I've had since President Obama, you know, just in my gut, since President Obama was inaugurated.
So now's the time to organize, Len. Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sorry. What I was going to say is it's no longer time to tell people that you're a sucker. It's time to talk in a we. You know, we've been played.
Yes.
You know, we've all been played.
Yes.
And it's, you know, and we've got to go. And, you know, when I hopefully get to talk to Bernie soon, I'm going to say, look, you have to put out a feeler. Give people the idea that if you're nominated, on the short list is Elizabeth Warren. That'll get enough attention. I mean, right now, my son needed a quote for commitment, and I gave him Gandhi's. First, they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win.
Right.
And we've got to go from the ignore to the laugh stage.
Yeah. And this, and here's, you know, if Bernie would pick Elizabeth Warren as his vice presidential candidate, if he became the Democratic nominee, they couldn't be stopped. I really and truly believe that they would win the election.
He's got to put that feeler out.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to ask.
Well, it's
would you run with Bernie Sanders?
Right. It's really too early for that. But the point is that there are a few politicians in America where the voters get it. I mean, Sherrod Brown had something like $40 million thrown against him in Ohio by the Republicans, yet he won. Bernie Sanders had a billionaire come in from out of state into Vermont and spend $100 a vote trying to beat Bernie. And Bernie did not run one single television ad. Not only did he not run no negative ads, he didn't run one single television ad, and he beat this billionaire 2-1. Why? Because the people in Vermont know that Bernie is a truth teller. He's absolutely consistent and absolutely truthful. The same is true of Elizabeth Warren. The same is true of Sherrod Brown. The same is true of Jan Schakowsky. The same is true of Raul Grijalva. The same is true of Keith Ellison. Same is true of Mark Pocan. There are a bunch of good people who deserve our support. And the problem is that increasingly, you know, they are being overweight. You know, you got these corporate Dems. I mean, you know, I let me just publicly invite right now any of the Democratic senators who voted to grease the skids for TPP by voting for this trade authority today, who voted for Fast Track. Thanks, Len, for the call. Any of you, you are welcome to come on my program. I will not mistreat you. Tell your story.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Liz Shield is on the line with us. She is the editor-at-large at PJ Media. PJMedia.com is the website. And the author of a new article titled, which you can read over at PJMedia.com, If They Can't Get Your Guns, They'll Get Your Ammo. Liz, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you. Your article is basically a rant against this piece of legislation, the Stop Online Ammunition Sales Act of 2015 that was introduced by Bonnie Watson, the Democrat from New Jersey, in the House of Representatives. What is wrong with stopping the Adam Lanzas of the world from buying thousands and thousands of rounds of ammunition on the Internet?
Well, I don't think you're just going to be stopping the Adam Lanzas. You're going to be stopping a lot of people who buy ammunition in bulk who are law-abiding citizens, like a sports shooter, for instance. I'm a sports shooter, and I do have to buy ammunition in bulk on occasion. And so I would then be put through this inconvenience, me and many other Americans, And I'm not really sure it's effective.
Liz, I am a sports shooter too, and I've never had a problem walking into a licensed gun dealer, and I do it with some regularity. One of my three brothers is a major sports shooter, and whenever I get back to Michigan, that's what we do. He's got a target range in his backyard, lives out in rural Michigan. And he and his wife and my wife and I, we competitively shoot for fun. I am not hysterically worried if I have to go into a gun shop and show my ID. I mean, it's like, I don't get this. Why Republicans are all like, you got to show an ID to vote. You got to show an ID to get on an airplane. You got to show an ID to buy Sudafed. What the hell's wrong with showing an ID to buy ammunition? It kills people.
Well, it does kill people. But what you're talking about is the bill, the proposed bill states 1,000 rounds, more than 1,000 rounds, within 5 consecutive days.
Have you ever fired more than 1,000 rounds in 5 days?
I have.
Okay, then you're at high risk for lead poisoning, you know.
So I have, and
I'm
not serious. I do it all the time, because ammunition prices, as you know, because you're a shooter, have skyrocketed. So I have to be very economical about my shooting. But yes, actually, I have. If I shoot in a tournament, I do shoot more than 1,000 rounds.
So what's wrong with showing ID?
But I think it's unnecessary. I mean, it's like asking.
But you want people to show ID when they vote?
Yes, I think they should show ID when they vote.
Okay, so our right to kill people is more important than our right to vote.
But really, what percentage of people who are out there on the street killing people are purchasing 1,000 rounds within a 5-day consecutive period?
Let me refer you to Waco, Texas.
Okay, that's Waco, Texas. First of all, that's not one person. You're talking about a group of people.
Who had thousands of rounds of ammunition.
But among how many people were arrested? 190. So you're not talking about, it's not like one person came and said, here's the ammo.
We are awash in ammunition, Liz.
How
There's no shortage of this. You know, I stand with Rand Paul on this. Rand
over
Paul,
Washington,
yes.
Washington, D.C., are all of those people purchasing more than 1,000 rounds at once? No. In fact, I'll venture to say almost none of them are.
Okay, two questions.
Okay.
Yesterday on the floor of the Senate, Rand Paul said, and I'm paraphrasing from memory, but it's, you know, it's not word for word. But he said basically, I would like to ask my fellow conservatives to please have as much concern for the Fourth Amendment as they do for the Second Amendment. And here's why I think conservatives, by and large, don't care so much about the Fourth Amendment. But they do care about the Second. Because the Second Amendment is generating, following the Second Amendment, in quotes, is generating billions of dollars in profits every month for the weapons industry in this country, and they recycle a lot of that money both into conservative media and to conservative and Republican politicians. Whereas the Fourth Amendment, if you follow the Fourth Amendment, there's nobody making money on it. If you break the Fourth Amendment, on the other hand, companies like Booz Allen Hamilton, who Ed Snowden worked for, they're making billions breaking the Fourth Amendment.
Well,
it seems to me like our priorities are totally screwed up.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you on that, because if you're talking to somebody who values the Fourth Amendment as much as the Second, and if you go to pjmedia.com, you will see me reading the charge in support of Rand Paul and exactly what he's doing. So I'm not the best person to, I'm not going to say the Second Amendment is more important than the Fourth, because I'm simply not going to say that.
And let me add to that.
Yes, it is an industry, but do you know how much money the firearms industry and that includes hunting, shooting supplies, shooting clothing, anything related to the industry. A lot of that money actually goes back into conservation. We're taxed.
Oh, come on, Liz.
We have extra taxes put on all the money that we do spend related to shooting that goes into conservation. So it's not just a bunch of greedy robbers.
Liz, that is the thinnest fig leaf, and you know that.
It's not. It's a fact. I'm a capitalist.
You know,
if you want to make money,
if you want conservation,
I should go for it.
If you want conservation, go do it like Teddy Roosevelt. You know, be in favor of national parks. Be in favor. I'm all in favor of conservation. We don't need to have more weapons of war. We don't need to have more bullets on our streets, more guns on our streets.
Looking at gun violence in Washington, D.C. or in Baltimore in an average weekend. How many of those people that are regularly out there killing other people are buying ammunition in quantities of 1,000 or more?
How many of them are buying it online? I mean, that's the goal of this legislation. It's called the Stop Online Ammunition Sales Act.
I would say they wouldn't, but people who do buy it online are people like me. I regularly get emails from my preferred vendors telling me of sales. People like you who do shoot as a sport, and people who are hunters. Those are people who do buy their ammunition online. So You are inconveniencing me. I'm going to have to take time out.
And I think it's entirely appropriate to inconvenience people who want something that will kill other people.
But how many, what percentage, but it's not effective. What percentage of people
it is absolutely
are out there
effective.
Constantly murdering people
no, Liz,
are buying more than 1,000 rounds
Liz,
of time?
This debate is over. It absolutely is effective. If you look at gun violence in Chicago versus gun violence in New York City, you will see a big difference. Why? Because in New York City, the surrounding counties and states have gun control. In Chicago, the surrounding cities and counties do not. And so the vast majority of the shootings that happen in Chicago are with ammunition that was bought in Indiana or was bought, you know, outside of Chicago. Whereas in New York City, there are not anywhere near as much shootings. Violence has been going down steadily since the 1980s.
You can go into a Walmart and you can buy a box of ammo. And that is probably exactly how this stuff has happened.
When you show your ID.
Consumers of online. And let me add something else. You know, if I have to go into a store and it's not as, I'm not a fan of showing ID, but there's an additional charge
except to vote.
That process. So now you're again making it even more expensive for me to purchase ammunition, and I'm not a criminal, and most people who buy ammunition bulk are not.
So it's expensive to get an ID, and therefore you should show the ID to vote.
Well, it's $10 to get an ID.
Liz, let me, if I may, I think we're kind of going around in circles here.
Well,
if I could just toss another thing out in the minute that we have left.
It's similar to when you go to buy a gun and you have to pay a $50, it's usually $50 for them to process the paperwork and run a background check.
Which is fine with me. Liz, hang on just a second.
Okay.
TPP, the fast track just passed the Senate.
Yes, I saw that.
With 12 Democratic votes and Rand Paul voted against it to his credit. There was several. Mike Lee voted against it. Some Republicans who voted against this. TPP, if this harmonizes gun standards, we're going to end up with Japan's gun standards where it's illegal to own any gun or any ammunition whatsoever. Is that a concern of yours?
Yes, it is, actually. I'm not a fan of the TPP. So.
Have you seen the Obamatrade.com website?
No, I haven't.
It's great. It's a conservative website. It's the conservative arguments against Obama trade, TPP, and, you know, I strongly encourage you to check it out. It just seems to me like this issue is a relatively small issue. You know, the idea that people can buy anonymously, can buy ammunition online is not a good thing for us. It's not a huge issue. It's not like they're trying to buy surface-to-air missiles. But, you know, there are, you know, the Fourth Amendment is being broken. Our right to vote is being broken. We're giving away our sovereignty. I mean, it's like big stuff going on. Anyhow, Liz, I'm blithering and we're out of time. Liz,
Tom.
Thank you for dropping by. PJmedia.com is the website. You can read Liz's piece. If they can't get your guns, they'll get your ammo right over there at PJ Media. Thanks, Liz.
Bye.
15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, you got to show ID to vote. That's a good idea. No ID for your ammo. Why is my brain exploding? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Victor in Grass Valley, California. Hey, Victor, you wanted to talk about Bernie? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV, by the way, on Dish Network.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to talk about him running as a Democrat. They're not going to let him win as a Democrat. So I think we need the poor man's super PAC as a chain letter with a cover letter calling these people out as puppets, because that's all we have is puppets. And we need to stop the puppetry. So independent.
The puppetry happens inside the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and inside the other parties, too. For example, you got in the Libertarian Party. You got candidates who are funded by very, very wealthy people because they promote the interests of billionaires and corporations. In the I'm forgetting Gary's last name now, even the guy who's running around with the American Independence Party or whatever, the perennial candidate for president. And I mean, you know, it's like nobody can run anything of any consequence without, you know, either the support of a major political party or a billionaire. And with regard to your saying Bernie running as a Democrat, the Democratic Party will not allow him to become president. That's what we thought about George McGovern, too. And George McGovern became a candidate. I don't think Bernie is going to be a George McGovern candidate. I am George McGovern was not aggressive at all in that election. And I remember that election. And that's why he lost it, in my opinion. and, you know, not to mention a few dirty tricks on the other side. But and Ed Muskie actually was the guy who could have easily beaten Nixon, and Nixon, with his dirty tricks, and Chuck Colson got Muskie out of the race. But I believe that Bernie inside the Democratic Party actually has a chance.
Yeah, if okay, say he does get that, but if he doesn't, is it possible for him to run as an independent still?
You wouldn't want
the
that.
People, the people,
he won't do it.
Chain letter,
he will not do it.
The concept is having a chain
Turn
letter.
Me up. He won't do it, Victor.
Well, it's up to the people.
I'm no, no, it's up to Bernie. He has said he's not going to play the spoiler.
People write him in as the candidate is what I'm talking about. Forget about this voting because they're puppets. You're not going to get anywhere. You have it's just like Obama.
Victor, if the election comes down to Jeb Bush or Scott Walker on the Republican ticket versus Hillary Clinton on the Democratic ticket, and you write in Bernie, you are voting for a Republican.
That's that old concept of that.
It's true. It's the flaw in our Constitution that James Madison pointed out in Federalist Number 10.
Tom, look, it is about information, and it's about truth. I'm talking about a movement. You're talking about a movement. It's just like you said, you need a song to do. Well, I'm called Protestor. I write protest songs, and I'm working on a song right now called Fox Zombie. So it is an explosion of just either you give in and just become a Fox zombie or you stand up and take the country back. We can't take it back with the Democratic Party. Obama's shown that. The only reason Obama's in office so they wouldn't be able to prosecute Bush because the racism wouldn't allow it. So we are being played constantly.
No, it wasn't the racism, Victor. It was, you know, Jerry Ford established this precedent of presidents don't hold previous presidents accountable. And he didn't hold Richard Nixon accountable. And then Jimmy Carter didn't hold Reagan accountable or Bush. And then Obama did not hold Bush, you know, W accountable. But it's got nothing to do with race. That's got to do with being on the inside. It's the insiders versus the outsiders. Victor, thank you for the call. I respectfully disagree, but I have a lot of respect for your point of view. And I understand it. I once shared it. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. I was just blown away yesterday. Rand Paul on the floor of the Senate, he's talking about, you know, well, if we let Section 215 of the Patriot Act expire, he was having this conversation with Joe Manchin, the Democrat from West Virginia. And Joe Manchin said, well, what about the USA Freedom Act? And Rand Paul said, well, that's got a lot of problems, too. And then Joe Manchin said, well, and they were literally having this colloquy. They were having this conversation back and forth on the floor of the Senate in real time in front of the world. I was watching it on C-SPAN. Actually, I was watching it on Senate.gov. I was watching it on the Senate site because I couldn't get into C-SPAN because I was, you know, over at the RT studio. And you get into C-SPAN and it says, who's your cable provider? And what's your ID? And I don't remember that stuff. So anyway, I'm watching this thing, and Rand Paul says, well, if they all expire, if Section 215 expires, and there is no USA Freedom Act, we're still in good shape. We knew who the 9-11 guys were. The FBI knew who they were. They were living with one of them. They knew who these guys were. They just didn't bother to tell the CIA. The CIA had information. They didn't bother to tell the FBI. Presumably, that's been solved. We don't need to get the bulk metadata on everybody on Earth to know these things. And then Rand Paul comes out, in opposition to Fast Track too. I mean, you know, these may be just postures and positions that he's taking to run for president. And there's no way in hell that I would ever vote for Rand Paul for president. He's toxic. He is his philosophies, his libertarian philosophies benefit largely the billionaires at the expense of everybody else. But it's like, if you know Republicans, if you have Republican friends, if you have Republicans who are members of your family, tell them to go to Obamatrade.com and read it. And you should, too, just to be familiar with the conservative arguments against TPP and all these other insane trade deals that have ripped the guts out of the middle class in America and moved it to China. China has exploded as they're now the largest economy, or the second to us, that I believe a few months ago they became the largest economy in the world. And why? Because we gave them our jobs. We sent our manufacturing there, and we shot ourselves in our own foot. And we started this, you know, with Reaganism, and it's time to end it. It's time to say enough of Reaganism. Drew, in Olathe, Kansas. Hey, Drew, what's up?
Oh, hey, Tom.
Am I mispronouncing your town?
Oh, I'm in Lawrence right now, but I'm usually in Olathe. So. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I was looking at, I was online on Twitter yesterday, and I was looking at Ron Wyden, and Ron Wyden's utterly opposed to, he's opposed to the whole, you know, bringing back the Patriot Act, but for some reason he utterly supports the TPP, which, I don't know, it just seems like we're trading one master for another.
Yeah.
Because I can just flash forward and imagine that in a park it says no drones allowed, or some regulations pass that says, okay, 500 feet above your house is your own airspace, and you can't allow drones to fly without your express written permission. And then some within your district or local municipality, and then some corporation says, well, hey, it's costing us money. We want to run these drones around and spy on you because we're getting money for this.
Right, and we can make a profit, and so we're going to sue you for our lost profits. Yeah,
and,
that's,
another,
that's how it works.
And I was going to say another warning, which you were bringing up with the food. I'm very ardently opposed to genetically modified food, as well as organic, and I'm very informed on my decision. This is going to put into jeopardy these labeling requirements for people like me.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And people like me, and some of us. I mean, you know, I have celiac disease. If there's mm-hmm. And I'm increasingly convinced that this is not just gluten, that it's glyphosate. It's, you know, the Roundup, Monsanto's Roundup product. I've been carefully watching the research on that, and a lot of us, a lot of people out here who have developed over the last decade, who have developed celiac disease or some variation on it, can't eat wheat. It corresponds with the point in time where wheat growers in the United States started spraying Roundup on their wheat crop 2 or 3 days before harvest, so that the stalks of wheat would all turn brown and crispy. And so that the threshers or the harvesters or whatever they're called, I guess they're harvesters, that cut those heads of wheat off the wheat stalks can more efficiently do it. So, you know, and it is more profitable for the farmers. But now the wheat supply is contaminated with Roundup. And I, you know, hey, the TPP and these other trade deals may make it so not only can we not stop this stuff, we can't even know about it. I mean, this is nuts. Drew, thanks for the call. Patrick in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Hey, Drew. Patrick, what's up? Patrick? In Gaithersburg? Patrick is not listening to his telephone. Wes in Willits, California. Hey, Wes, what's up?
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
Sure.
Yesterday when I was watching Sam Cedar, I saw that there are Medicare cuts in the TPP, and this was to pay for that job assist program they had to help people that lose their jobs from trade find new work.
Right. It's not actually part of the TPP. It is part of
the TPA.
Yeah, it was part of the fast track that was passed today. I don't know if that made it through or not, but the Republicans were proposing, you know, yeah, we're going to lose a bunch of jobs. We need to have $700 million to retrain Americans for all the new jobs that we're going to have. Like, here's how you can flip burgers. And where do we get the $700 million from? We take it out of Medicare. Yeah, I went off on a long rant about that yesterday, Wes. You are absolutely right. Thank you for the call. 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Remember Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old who got the 12-year-old black kid who got shot by the police in Cleveland? They were going to charge him with aggravated menacing and inducing panic.
Fearful and unbalanced.
News has never been softer.
The most distrusted name in news.
To be honest, I've never seen such dysfunction.
So, who is responsible for these outrages?
This is Fox So-Called News.
Right, our Fox alert for the day. Fox loves to point out Brian Williams' mistakes and dishonesty, but you won't hear a peep about Bill O'Reilly's hypocrisy. According to court documents obtained by the blog Gawker, Bill O'Reilly, who actually wrote a book called Culture Warrior, has been accused of physically assaulting his ex-wife in front of his teenage daughter. Of course, the Fox So-Called News host denies the allegations, but his public meltdowns like, do it live, damn it, make it pretty clear that Bill O's got quite the temper. For the sake of his family, we can hope these allegations are false, and maybe they'll make Fox and Bill O'Reilly think twice before their next racist tirade about how the black community needs more family values. And by the way, let me just riff a little bit more on this, and then pick up your phone calls. But I have done a lot of programs that have to do with race issues and white privilege and how the Second Amendment was there to protect the slave patrols in the South and all these other issues. Let me speak to, and as clearly as I possibly can, to our friends and colleagues and my viewers and listeners, and just push this out, please, of color. The reason why poverty in communities of color has been going up for the last 30 some odd years is because of Reaganism and because of free trade. The reason that Baltimore, down parts of Baltimore are a wasteland. The reason why parts of Detroit are a wasteland is because of these free trade deals. As evil as the Cleveland police were in saying or trying to say that Tamir Rice was a criminal guilty of aggravated menacing and inducing panic, a 12-year-old kid playing with a toy gun in a public park. As evil as it is that the Cleveland police were saying that the victims of Tamir Rice were the state of Ohio, Officer Lehman, who shot and killed him, and Officer Garmbach, who drove the vehicle. As evil as that is, you would not have poverty in that neighborhood if there was a good factory there. You would not have these problems if there were good union wages available. And they have left this country because of the so-called free trade dimension of Reaganism, which has been embraced by Reagan, was embraced by Bush Sr., was embraced by Clinton, was embraced by Bush Jr., and is now being not just embraced, but pushed by President Obama. And if this is a racial issue as much as any other part of this stuff, because when you destroy the middle class of America, when you reduce the standard of living in the United States, who goes first? People of color. Minority communities are impacted hardest and disproportionately because they don't have 20 generations of white privilege of accumulated cultural and financial and, equity, as it were. But instead, another point about the importance of movement politics. MoveOn.org just put out a press release or an email. This is from Justin Krebs, the campaign director for MoveOn.org's Civic Action Campaign. He says, quote, "Today, the Senate advanced the dangerous fast-track bill. MoveOn.org members are disturbed that the Senate would put the interests of massive multinational corporations ahead of American workers and consumers, and especially disappointed in Democratic Senators Cantwell, Murray, Heitkamp, Coons, and McCaskill. These elected officials betrayed the voters who elected them to office by supporting trade promotion authority that threatens to rush through a secretive trade deal which could undermine protections for workers, protections for consumers, protections for the environment, while giving big corporations even more power. MoveOn.org members are troubled by the Senate's actions today, and we are ready to ensure that House Democrats understand that the interests of American workers must come before those of massive multinational corporations." You know, I keep telling you, it's movement politics is the only thing that's going to change this. MoveOn.org, another great organization. You can participate. You can sign up. You don't have to give them money. You can put in some time. You can just sign petitions. There is a whole spectrum from full bore, total, I'm in it commitment to, here, I can help out a little bit. But participate in one of these things. MoveOn.org, Progressive Democrats of America, PDAmerica.org, MoveToAmend.org, DemocracyForAmerica.com. And there's a bunch of other great ones out there as well. Okay, back to your calls now. Patrick in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Hey, Patrick, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I was calling about the TPT, and actually you literally just said what I was calling about, because I used to be a paid subscriber of PJ Media. I'm friends with a lot of the hosts and former hosts on Facebook, And one thing that they would point out during the riots in Baltimore is that cities like Baltimore and Detroit and all these cities with these economic hardships have not seen a Republican mayor in decades, that they have all been run by Democrats. And I'm thinking, how do I respond to that? But then I realized that, you know, Baltimore and Detroit, they were steel towns. Pittsburgh was a steel town. And so all of the economic hardship actually came from the Reaganistic outsourcing of jobs. And I was going to make that point and ask you your thoughts on that, but you literally just said that while I was on hold.
Right. And folks are electing Democrats because they're hoping the Democrats can push back. But the problem is that we have a national trade policy. I mean, no matter how much the mayor of Baltimore, I'm blanking on her name right now, but Stephanie Rawlings Blake, that's right. No matter how much she wants to revive Baltimore, you know, Baltimore used to be a big manufacturing town. Literally from the George Washington administration until the Reagan era, they made things
Bethlehem
in Baltimore.
Bethlehem Steel.
Yeah, among others. I mean, they used to make socks and jeans in Baltimore. They made shoes in Baltimore. They made bicycles in Baltimore. They used to make all kinds of stuff in Baltimore. They don't make any of it anymore. It's all made in China.
I also want to say real quick, I am very proud of my senators, Senator Mikulski and Senator Cardin, which have always been extremely out of touch, incredibly unhelpful offices, have been actually listening and very interested in what we had to say. And I'm so proud that both of them voted against.
Patrick, you make a great point because, you know, I named the 12 Democrats who voted for this trade promotion authority, this fast track. I didn't name the other Democrats who voted against it. And if you're represented by a United States senator who voted against this, whether it's, you know, Mike Lee or Rand Paul, or whether it's one of the Democrats who voted against it, you might want to, in fact, you should call him up at 202-225-3121 and say, thank you. Thank you for opposing Fast Track. And I hope that, you know, when TPP comes up, you will oppose that as well. And, you know, good point, Patrick. We need to honor the people who are doing right. At the same time that we are calling out, shall we say, the people who are doing wrong. Thank you, Patrick, for the call. Helen in Ithaca, New York, listening to 1470 AM. Hey, Helen, you had an idea on how to protest the TPP?
Well, yeah, I have this lame brain idea.
Okay.
But I shared it with Danielle and to cause trouble. But when I say cause trouble, I mean do it in a good way. It gets good. Like, we could send either to the State Department or directly to the White House to ask for information on how to obtain visas, because it sounds like, you know, either people who are unemployed or on the verge of unemployment, our jobs are going overseas. So how do I get a visa to go work in Vietnam or China or, you know?
Well, here's the problem. You know, the minimum wage in Vietnam is either 52 or 56 cents an hour. Do you really want to chase your job there for that?
You got to move the whole family over there, I guess. All right. Just the problem is to let them know that. Like,
if I was getting a visa, Helen, having lived in Germany for a year where they do engage in trade protectionism, it's very hard to find American-made products in Germany. Why? Because they make it very hard to import products into Germany. And not just Germany, the rest of the European countries. If I was thinking about getting a visa, if I was thinking about leaving the country, I'd be going to Northern Europe, where, you know, the democratic socialist countries where they actually govern the way that Bernie Sanders is talking about. But I'm not. I'm going to stay here and I'm going to fight for this country. I am not going down without a fight. And frankly, I'm optimistic. I think, you know, these guys always overreach, and I think that they have overreached way too far. Helen, thanks for the call. Hang on just a second, Jeff. We just have a minute left. Chris in Darlington, South Carolina. Just a minute, but it looks, Chris, like you have a short comment about Bernie. Chris? Chris is not there. Chris is not listening to his phone. Okay. Well, in that case, I will rant. Ella Ratner, by the way, in 5 minutes will be with us at the Talk Radio News Service. It is, you know, Thomas Paine in The Crisis, which was the first edition of what later became called Common Sense, in The Crisis said, and I'm paraphrasing this from memory, so it's not exact, but it's close. He said, now these are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will now no doubt shrink from the service of his country. But tyranny, like hell, is not easily overcome. We have a big fight. Are we going to fight for the United States of America? Or are we going to fight for basically a one-world government run by big corporations and billionaires? We know where the Republican Party stands. They're with the billionaires and the one world and the transnational corporations. Right down the line. I mean, there are a couple of weird exceptions, you know, but they're going to fall into line. But the Democratic Party, how do we take it back? Let's start now.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with your calls and talk radio news, and then we'll continue into the next hour as well. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And John, watching Free Speech TV in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. I'm a conservative, but I'm strictly against any trade deal.
Mm-hmm.
NAFTA killed America as much as the unions and Democratic leadership has for the last four decades.
Okay.
And we've got to do something. I mean, you keep bringing up Reagan. Reagan's the best president we've had in the last six decades.
What did he do that was good?
Well, he the tax reliefs and everything he
did. Now, Reagan raised taxes on people making less than $100,000 16 times.
Well,
he lowered taxes on people making more than $1 million.
I know you're on against business taxes and all, we're getting breaks and stuff, but we need a zero tax against all business.
Why?
For at least a century to put America back to work.
Oh, come on, John. You don't really believe that.
Oh yeah, I totally believe it. If you had the low, even if we put it at 5 or 10% on all business on the net bottom line at the end of the year, if we put a 5 or 10%, you'd see.
So let me get this straight. I just want to understand this, John. Corporations in America need government to exist, right? Government authorizes corporate charters. If a corporation signs a contract with somebody else, they need court systems to enforce those contracts. If somebody violates a contract, they need jails and all this stuff, right? This is the infrastructure of the United States. Corporations need fire departments to protect their property. They need police departments to protect their goods. And are you telling me that you and I, as individual taxpayers, should pay 100% of the cost of all these things that corporations use in order to make profits for a very small number of stockholders and shareholders and CEOs? Is that really what you're telling me?
No, I'm saying we need a flat tax, 5 or 10%.
So you're saying corporations should pay taxes, but they should pay the same. So let me get this straight.
The same as us.
First of all, if you're going to have a flat, so now you're shifting to income taxes for people, or are we talking about corporate taxes here?
Well, really, it needs to be equal for both.
Why?
Well, I mean, that way you would have a zero unemployment.
No, you won't.
You would have. And just like Arizona,
John, you've got corporations all over the United States that are paying no taxes at all, and they're aggressively shipping jobs overseas. They don't give a rat's ass about you or me or our jobs. They don't care. They only care about making money. And the taxes that they're paying are simply the cost of being able to do business in the United States.
Okay.
I mean, look at you've got public transportation, you've got buses, you've got roads. These are the things that allow workers to get to work at the corporation, and you and me to pay for this, not the corporation?
Look at our rail system that just wrecked up.
I know the Republicans have destroyed it over 30 years. We used to have the best rail system literally in the world. We started this thing.
Yeah, but right now we look like a third world country.
I know, because Republicans have fought every effort to fully fund Amtrak.
Well, funding had nothing to do with that wreck, not one thing.
It absolutely did. The lack of funding is the reason why they didn't have that positive speed control in there that other countries have had for literally 20 years.
That's wrong.
They did not approve the money for it, John. I'm sorry. You know, if you've just been watching Fox News, you're getting half the story. You can lay those deaths on Republicans' feet easy. John, thank you for the call. Will you call again sometime? We'll figure out why you love Reagan so much. I still haven't been able to figure it out. We'll be right back. Alan Ratner with us in just a second. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can buy a, or actually it's not a buy, it's a, you make a contribution to Ellen's charity that helps women in South Sudan who've seen people killed, family members killed in front of them as part of their PTSD therapy. They're making these beautiful little crystal, as Ellen is modeling for us right now. Ellen Ratner in the studio with us.
Well, thank you, and it's a great Father's Day present. And, okay, so before we talk about Governor Siegelman and all the news of the day, I want to say, you know, you were talking about do we want one world run by these banksters and big corporations. Well, last year there was a small congressional dinner, about 100 people, and Bill Gates was the guest, and they were interviewing him. And they were asking him questions, honestly, there was no way he could have known the answer. I mean, it's just too broad. No human being has that fund of information. But because he was Bill Gates and a billionaire, they thought everything he said was absolutely the cat's meow.
He was the Oracle of Delphi.
Exactly. And that's the problem, is that we think that rich people somehow have these answers, and they don't.
Yeah, you're right. They're,
so
they're,
I just wanted to give my two cents.
Just because somebody's rich doesn't mean they're any smarter than anybody else.
That's right. Exactly. And especially Dr. Tom here. Okay. So I know you've been talking a little bit about this, and we've had the free-don.org. But yeah, Governor Siegelman, I just gave you the actual readout of how the circuit court, the 11th Circuit Court, found on him. And I've got to tell you, it's very upsetting. They found that he really did take a bribe, that the sentence was fair. I mean, first of all, Scrushy or whatever his name is. He was from Alabama. I mean, he's from that neck of the woods. Why shouldn't he get appointed
to that?
Well,
and the two previous Republican governors had appointed Scrushy to the exact same position that Don Siegelman did.
Right. I mean, it's the most outrageous thing in the world. And when you read those pages, and I brought it to you as a present.
Thank you.
I have to give you a present, Dr. Toms, occasionally. And you're just going to be amazed.
Yeah.
I'm actually speechless, and I don't know what we can do about it.
This is a big setback. So people can go to free-don.org and at the very least kick in some help for this guy, because it looks like he's going to be in prison for a few more years.
Yeah, at least till 2017 or sometime in 2017. I propose, actually, Tom, that you and I go down and interview him.
I would love to.
Well, we should plan on doing that. Okay, Trade Promotion Authority went through today, 62 votes. Many Democrats went through it. Should I go through the list?
No, I've done that like three times now in the last hour.
All right, so you don't need my list. Yeah. But what happened is at the very end, Gene Shaheen of New Hampshire and Rob Portman, a Republican, came in when they realized it was going to happen, or they thought that some of the Democrats were going to happen, and so they went with it.
And my prediction on this, Ellen, is that those 12 Democrats who voted for Fast Track, when TPP comes up, because it no longer needs 60 votes, it can't
be
filibustered.
Right, it can be, all it has to do is it need 51.
Right, which is,
simple
and
majority.
And there's 51 Republicans, there's more than 51 Republicans in the Senate. So all those Democrats are going to vote against TPP.
And then they're going to say, I voted against it
in the election.
That's exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah.
You and I have been around this town too long.
Yeah. Well, I hope the American people have a long memory, because this is a betrayal.
And they're going to say, well, we just felt it should get a vote. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Okay. But you're right. They have plausible denial or plausible voting or whatever.
Well, they think. I think in this internet age, this Twitter age, this you know, instant connectivity, I think it's going to haunt them. But we'll see.
We will see. Okay. Now, Governor John Kasich from the great state of Ohio, my state, he's going to visit Georgia and South Carolina on Tuesday and Wednesday. Now, why is he doing that?
He wants to run for president.
That's exactly right. And he's not been declared. Actually, George Bush has not been declared. But his right. I mean, did I say George?
Yeah.
I meant Jeb. His Right to Rise PAC, which always emails me and all that kind of stuff. I mean, he's also not announced, but he's speaking in Oklahoma. He just actually spoke this morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
These guys are dancing around the campaign finance laws like there's no tomorrow. But, you know, what's her name? The head of the Federal Election Commission has said, we're not even going to enforce the laws this year. You know, it's amazing.
President Obama, he actually sat with the Atlantic editor on several issues. It happened on Tuesday. They released it today. He said, when he was talking about Ramadi, he actually said something different than the press secretary said yesterday. He said, there's no doubt there was a tactical setback, although Ramadi had been vulnerable for a long time. He said it is indicative that the training of Iraqi forces and fortifications are not happening fast enough in Anbar. Then he talked about Iraq and nukes. This is very interesting. He said the fact that you are anti-Semitic or racist doesn't preclude you from being interested in survival. It doesn't preclude you from being rational about the need to keep your economy afloat. It doesn't preclude you from making strategic decisions about how you stay in power. So the fact that the supreme leader is anti-Semitic doesn't mean this overrides all of his other considerations. And that's how he is framing the Iran nuclear debate.
I think that's actually a reasonable frame.
That's interesting.
You know, I mean, we have good relations with a lot of countries that are really, really nasty.
Look at our relations with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
I mean, they're chopping
poster
off
child.
People's house, right. heads, right?
Did you see where they're running? They ran a help wanted ad in Saudi Arabia. They need 6 new executioners because the executions, they've executed more people as of May than they did in the entire last year. And they ran an ad. No experience needed. Hey, do you like to use swords? Do you like to chop things off?
No.
But wait, there's more. We'll
Did
pay you
Did they really
to do
run
it.
That? Well, you know.
Honest to God.
I was in Saudi Arabia as a guest of the government. We passed what's called Chop Chop Square, and I went completely nuts on them.
Yeah.
But they knew that. I mean, I've been very open about my view of that. He also talked to The Atlantic about Saudi Arabia getting nuclear weapons, speaking of them. And he said that he doesn't believe that they're going to pursue their own nuclear program. And he said that he's hoping that they understand that their own security and defense is much better served working with us, the United States. And he said their covert, presumably pursuit of a nuclear program would greatly strain the relationship they've got with the United States.
Hmm.
So that was kind of interesting. Now, on another issue, 21 Democrat senators and one Republican, they call in this a bipartisan letter, Senator Susan Collins of Maine, wrote to the Secretary of Defense on gay men and lesbians. This is Memorial Day weekend. They said that the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell represented great progress, but the military is not yet an equitable environment for gay, lesbian, or bisexual service members. Very interesting.
Well, that's interesting. So they're looking for more protections?
They are.
Pay attention
for more
when people complain,
exactly.
That sort of thing?
Yes.
Remarkable. Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Free-Down.org. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
It was great to see you. We'll be right back after the news.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, let me dig out my pile here. Hi, there's a bunch. Fast track got passed through the Senate. There is still a question whether it'll pass the House. The fight is now going to the House of Representatives. And there, you know, the House has a very strong progressive caucus. The progressive caucus in the House of Representatives is either the largest or the second largest caucus in Congress. Bigger than the Tea Party caucus. Bigger than, I think, pretty much any others. I'm not sure about the Black Caucus, but you know, whatever. It's big. There's a lot of progressives, Democrats in the House of Representatives, and there's a lot of quote conservative Republicans, Tea Party Republicans. Now the reason for this, and the reason why, and I thought this was fascinating today to see this study about how members of Congress actually believe that their districts are more conservative than the districts actually are. Okay, and there's actually a reason for this, and it's TPM is writing about this, how researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, and the University of Michigan looked at the voting records of members of Congress and then looked at the actual political positions in their districts, and what they found was that basically, the average American legislator thinks that his or her district is 15 points more conservative than they are. Now, among Republicans, it's more like 20 points. Among Democrats, it's around 10 points. And I would suggest to you that the reason why is because, with the exception of maybe 30 seats in the House of Representatives out of the 435 seats in the House, with the exception of 30 plus or minus, because of years and years, decades and decades, centuries, arguably, of gerrymandering and redistricting, which are essentially the same thing. Every 10 years, the Constitution requires that the congressional districts be redrawn so that every district, so that every rep, every person in the House of Representatives is representing roughly the same number of people. And they redraw these lines so that you've got these totally, you know, okay, we'll have one district here that we know is going to be 70% Republican, and we'll have one district next to it that we know is going to be 70% Democratic. And that way, those two members of Congress, or whoever they may be, they know that if they win the primary, they don't have to worry about the general election. Now, who votes in the primaries? The extreme ideologues. People like me vote in the primaries. The people who really understand politics and who really care about politics, or at least think they understand politics. People who are concerned about who their party's nominee is going to be. And so this is why I believe that we have so many good progressives in the House of Representatives, because in those reliably Democratic districts, progressives are, you know, in the primaries, the primary voters are putting progressives in. The Jan Schakowskis of the world, the Keith Ellisons of the world. And on the conservative side, that's why you've got so many Tea Partiers in Congress, because if they win the primary, they don't have to worry about the general election. Unlike the, you know, with the presidential race, they don't have to run to the center. We've seen this spectacle. It was, you know, Mitt Romney writ large was the last time we saw it, where he became a crazy right winger in order to win the primary, the presidential primary. And then once he became the candidate of the Republican Party, he had to move back to the center. And there are those who say that Hillary Clinton's doing the same thing right now with the left. She's going to the left, but once the primary is over, if she's the nominee, she'll go back to the center. And of course, center doesn't actually mean center, because the center of America, where most Americans actually stand, is actually what the media refers to as the corporate media refers to as left. Keep in mind, 75% of Americans want no trade deals. That's not a leftist position. When 75% of Americans don't want something, that's the American position. It's not Republican, it's not Democrat, it's not left, it's not right, it's American. So over 70% of Americans want Social Security and Medicare expanded, not contracted. These aren't left positions. These are American positions. But I digress. So I don't think it's that the lawmakers think that their districts are more conservative than they are. I think it's that the lawmakers are pandering to the primary voters. Because unlike the presidential race, where you've got to both run in the primary and then run in the general election against a genuine competitor, and in some Senate races as well, because they're statewide races, in the House races, in almost all of the House races, they don't have to run against a genuine competitor after they've won the primary. So the way to put the fear of God into a member of the House of Representatives, a little different than the Senate and certainly different than the White House, is threaten them with a primary. I will support a primary challenger to you. This is the message that the billionaires have been giving to Republicans now ever since Citizens United, since 2010. We will put up, and they do, by the way. Look at all these so-called moderate Republicans, just good old-fashioned Main Street corporate Republicans who have been thrown out of office in the last 6 years and replaced by hardcore right-wing crazy Tea Partiers because billionaires, right-wing cranks, got into the primaries. So the TPP, or actually the TPA, the Fast Track, Trade Promotion Authority, this fight, we just lost, America just lost this fight in the Senate. Because virtually every Republican, with three exceptions, Susan Collins, Rand Paul, and Mike Lee, if my recollection is correct, they all voted against it. But 12 Democrats sold out and voted for it. So America lost this. We're losing our sovereignty in the Senate. And the sellouts are there for everybody to see. Now, what's going to happen in the House? In the House of Representatives, these members of the House, the ones in the swing districts are particularly nervous, but that's only about 30 of them. But the ones who are in the safe seats, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, the way you put the fear of God in their hearts is by talking about the next primary, by calling up and saying, and the number for Congress is 202-225-3121, is by calling up and saying, I vote in primaries, and I'm paying attention to your vote. And if you're talking to a Republican, say, I do not want Obama trade, and I do not want this fast-track authority, which ties the hands of Congress to do their constitutionally mandated job. And if you're talking to a Democrat, you say, I don't want, you know, this shaft of this Trans-Pacific Partnership, and I don't think Congress should be giving up their right, their obligation to have open and public debate. Alan Grayson was on our TV show last night. 83 seconds is the amount of time that will be given if the Senate vote is replicated in the House. If the House passes this trade promotion authority, this fast track, and that vote's going to happen as soon as John Boehner can whip the votes. If that passes in the House, then debate will be limited to 83 seconds per member of Congress. This is George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, Abraham Lincoln, Franklin Roosevelt, Dwight Eisenhower, Richard Nixon. They're rolling over in their graves. Well, maybe not Richard Nixon, but you get my point. This is so fundamentally un-American. Gee, let's act in the best interest of the transnational corporations and the billionaires. To hell with the American working people. It's astonishing. It's truly astonishing. Anyhow, I've heard my rant on this. I'm going to pick up your calls after the break. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's process this, hey? We'll be right back. Fifteen minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Oh, Tom, yeah, you know how mad I am.
Yeah.
I would never propose to tell you what to do because you've done very well on your own with your ideas. But what I would suggest, though, is to incorporate what's going to happen, not what has just happened, but what's going to happen. What's going to happen, in my estimation, you can add to it or tell me where I'm wrong, that there's going to be twice as many offshore banking accounts opened up because they're going to have bank accounts in every country that they deal with. Yep. And Silicon Valley is going to start to disappear. And why I say that is because we're 12th in education in the world. So we're number 12 now.
Yep.
So there's going to be that many more educated kids to take over those Silicon Valley jobs that are paying $120,000, $150,000 a year. They're not going to pay that anymore. They're not going to pay $40,000 or $30,000 a year.
Right.
And you can see this all coming, and it's down the line. I mean,
Corky, it's been going on for 35 years. Ever since Reaganism seized control of America, and you're right. You know, Silicon Valley is already. I mean, you've got these big tech companies. They're already outsourcing their coding. Everybody's saying, hey, Americans need to learn how to code. You know, they need to learn how to write computer programs. I'm sorry. They already know how to do that in India, and you can hire people in India to write your computer programs for you for $4 an hour.
Exactly.
People with master's degrees.
Look at where the TPP is. It's the Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
That's even a lot closer than having to go overseas.
Yep.
When you can just go down to South America and Uruguay or, you know, Chile and set up business.
Yep.
And this $15 an hour that the states are passing, you're going to see that come to a halt real quick.
Well, no, I think that's going to be the new average wage. I mean, you know, before we went into this free trade insanity, this Reaganism, the largest employer in the United States was General Motors. It was an industry that my dad worked in when he was in the tool and die shop. And I'm guessing that probably my dad was making, you know, the equivalent of 40 or 50 bucks an hour. GM back in the day, in today's dollars, was paying an average wage of around $45 an hour. And now the largest employer in the United States, 35 years after Reaganism took hold, 35 years into this free trade, I nearly said an expletive on the air. You know what I'm saying. 35 years on, now the largest employer in the United States is non-unionized. It's Walmart, and they pay an average of, what, 9, 10 bucks an hour at the most?
Yeah.
$15 an hour is going to become the new standard.
When I was a senior in high school, I lied about my age. I worked 9 months at Delco Products in Rochester, New York.
Yeah.
But they wanted my birth certificate. They told me to bring it in when I started my first day.
Right.
Well, I couldn't bring it in because I lied. I was only 17. Right. I was still going to high school.
Right.
So, but they were so short of help, they just bypassed it.
Right. Because labor markets were tight because we had factories and we had millions and millions of jobs and our cities were... Yeah. No, you're Corky, it's the end of the world as we know it. You know, the R.E.M. song. No, it's not really, but this is a... dark day. This is a dark day. Corky, thank you for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. It's 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman here with you, the place where smart people get their news. And, you know, I'm not really on the ledge. I'm not about to jump. I'm not despairing. I see this ongoing corruption and destruction of our economy and our democracy, or our republic, if you prefer to use, you know, the Joe McCarthy approved phrase for the United States. I see the ongoing destruction of this as a process that is going to hit the wall at some point, and we are damn close to it. And that point is when a critical mass of American primary voters and a critical mass of American activists, whether they be conservatives or progressives or liberals, say enough, enough, damn it, we've had enough. And I think we are very, very close to that. That's the essence of my book, The Crash of 2016. And in fact, I'm suggesting how it probably will play out. So I don't need to be talked off the ledge, although I am seriously PO'd today. And so anyhow. Speaking of talking people off the ledge, Jeff, you're always good at it. Talk us all off the ledge.
I've got a list of hope for those in despair.
Okay, Jeff in Denver, you're on the air, Jeff.
Yeah, can you hear me, Tom?
I hear you just fine. Go for it.
Okay, I've got a list of hope for those in despair. But I wanted to present two memes, though, you may like, for this lazy, unfair capitalism we have. One is Warfare Queens.
Warfare Queens, I love it.
And the other one is this TPP is a corp d'etat.
A corp d'etat. That's great. You know, that's one you have to be a certain minimum level of literacy to get. But, yeah.
Well, we can bring people up.
There you go. There you go.
So for those who think we're at a hopeless point, just one thing I always want to remind people is 3 months and 9 days. I think you already know what that means.
Yeah, you're talking about the 27th Amendment or 26th?
Yeah, it only took 3 months and 9 days to get a constitutional amendment introduced and passed, ratified by all the states. That was the 18th right to vote.
Right.
So in 1963 or so, things looked really bad. We had the Cuyahoga River catching on fire, the Vietnam War was starting, racism, poverty, etc. And we didn't even have the communication abilities we have today, such as cell phones, the internet. Right. So in just that short, little bit more than a decade, we got the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, the 18-year-old right to vote. We got rid of Nixon, ended the Vietnam War, got to the moon. We got the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, EPA, NEPA, which is the National Environmental Policy Act, Endangered Species Act, the Marine Mammals Protection Act, the Wilderness Act, Great Society, where we reduced poverty by 20%. We got Medicare, Medicaid, welfare, Head Start, the Peace Corps, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So we can do a lot. We did a hell of a lot in a short time.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely
right. We can do it again.
I absolutely agree, Jeff, and that's why I'm just constantly saying to people, you know, Bernie Sanders is absolutely right that it's going to take a movement. Movements are more powerful than billionaires. It's just that you have to have the movement.
Yeah, we changed the world in the 60s.
Yes.
And a lot of that is still here today. It's being a lot of they're trying to dismantle it.
Yeah.
But the whole thing that you see is all these natural food stores and organic food. The 60s were successful in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to call people in wheelchairs invalid. We called them invalids.
Right.
Now look at you can go bicycling with somebody in a hand cart. You can go skiing with a one-legged person.
Yeah.
We've really changed the world. In many ways, we failed, but we've also done some wonderful things.
Yep.
And we can do it again really quickly in just a few short years.
I agree. And that's I think the move to amend thing, you know, David Cobb was on, I don't know, 6-8 months ago we were talking about this, and he said he sees it as a 5-year battle. I think the time scale for all of these things is being radically compressed as more and more Americans figure out what the hell's going on. And the Internet's a big variable in that. People are getting news off the Internet that the big networks will not touch. You will never see the big networks talk about, for example, net neutrality. I mean, you know, right now there's these lawsuits against the government over net neutrality from these big Internet service providers. No discussion of it in the media. No discussion go ahead.
My suggestion now is we start writing the legislation ourselves and hand it to the legislators. So right now, why don't we have a democracy day? As Bernie proposes, National Voting Day should be a holiday.
Right.
And so we can start doing all sorts of things. We can write our own legislation for single payer health care and things like that. So why not have open source law writing? And I'm proposing something we call the Lawbratory. And we start writing things.
A wiki of sorts. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes. Yes.
Open source.
And we have certain rules like laws can't be more than 11 pages or things like that. They have to be about single issues, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
We could do simple things. People can do it. And we can do it internationally or propose laws for all around the world.
Wow.
So we can take over. And as like somebody said, I saw something on Facebook about these are our leaders. No, they're not our leaders. They are our representatives. They don't call it the House of Leaders. They call it the House of Representatives.
Correct. The word leadership and leaders does not appear anywhere in any of our founding documents or in the Constitution. It's always representatives. You're absolutely
right. So why don't we provide them with something to represent?
Yeah.
It's up to us.
Yeah.
We're the ones who waste energy. We're the ones who don't vote and so forth. So it's like I saw a great cartoon today. It was someone saying gambling and buying a lottery ticket and so forth. They're saying, hey, if you don't play, you don't win. And then they said, oh, I'm not going to vote, though. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Amazing.
You know, it's our thinking is backwards. If you don't think your vote counts, that's all the more reason to vote because it will count more if more people vote.
Yeah. If elections don't matter and votes don't count, then why are the Koch brothers putting almost $1 billion into the next election? Elections are mind-bogglingly consequential. Jeff, do you have all my books or would you like one?
I don't have all of them. I can.
Okay, Shano says you are our caller for the day, and we've got a couple of my books kicking around here that I would love to send you an autographed copy of one of them.
2016, I don't have.
The Crash of 2016, you don't have? Oh, I would love to send you a copy of it. I'd love to get your thoughts on it. In fact, you know, give me a call after you've read it. So I'm going to put you on hold so Danielle can get your address. And Jeff, thank you for the call. You will be our caller of the day. And get the Crash of 2016, the plot to destroy America, and what we can do to stop it, which starts with, really it starts with the Powell memo in 1971. And then, you know, right up to Citizens United and on it goes, and why our economy is so fragile and how it might play out. 28 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman program. We will be back with your calls right after this. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
We'll be right back. And you can drop into our live free chat room, by the way, tomhartman.com. Hang out with some of the finest minds on earth. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, the place where despair is not an option. I love this headline over at Politicus USA. Bernie Sanders blasts the Senate for screwing over workers by voting to advance trade bill. In a fiery statement after the Senate voted to advance a bill that would give President Obama fast-track trade authority, Senator Bernie Sanders hammered, you know, and it goes on from there. So it is just so true. Lori in Bellevue, Florida. Lori, you're on the air. What's up?
Well, hello, Tom. I think that you're having a really bad day, so I just wanted to call you and give you my theory.
Okay.
I keep thinking that I could be right, so I'm going to run it by you. I just think that this could be all backwards and that Obama could be playing a really, really good game of chess. So just hang out for 1 minute. He wants big cities that are hurting the most to get those jobs back. And he's the only one that can do it. And we know that he wants that. And he knows that the hours hate him more than anything. So if he is for this enough, I think that he thinks he can help suppress the usual yes votes for trade agreements in Congress.
Yeah.
And I also think that he wants to help to weed out the wishy-washy Democrats, the ones that are voting for this. Not unlike the ones that voted against him the last time and didn't support his health care.
I wish I could share your rose-colored glasses, Lori. And you may be right. I mean, there's
well, could he actually at the end of the day be a this? Could he get
the reason why I don't think you're right
up to vote for it?
The reason why I think you're wrong is that these the Democrats who are voting in the Senate who voted for this trade promotion authority for fast track. It looks like they were given things that they wanted in exchange for that. And you know, that's a party decision. The president is the head of the party. And it was done over the objection, I'm assuming, of Harry Reid, who's opposed to TPP. Although maybe Harry Reid's in favor of fast track. I don't know, but I don't think so. He was fighting it. So I don't think that President Obama is playing chess. I think President Obama has come to the conclusion that Bill Clinton came to back in the 90s, that George Herbert Walker Bush was right, that there is a new world order, that that new world order is an interconnected world, that the extent, you know, there was this big theory that was advanced by the neocons, people like Huntington, you know, the guy who wrote The Last Man and the End of History. I mean, there was a bunch of books that were very, very popular in the 80s and 90s about how, well, one of the theories, for example, was that two countries that have McDonald's have never gone to war against each other ever in history. Okay, well, that now is no longer true, but up until a few years ago, that was the case. And so the argument that was made is that if you have a world where nations are interdependent because their trade is interdependent. Keep in mind, you know, the amount of the U.S. GDP that was involved in international trade in the 1930s and throughout World War II was less than 2 or 3% on average, you know, from year to year. I mean, 3% at its peak. That was the part of our GDP. Right now, I mean, you walk into any store and look at all the stuff that came from Asia, a large chunk of our economy, I'm sorry, I don't know the percentage, but my guess would be it's probably somewhere between 10 and 30% of our economy is involved in international trade, might even be higher than that. And so what these fellows are suggesting, these men and women are suggesting, is that in an interconnected world like that, the risk of war goes down. The risk of war then becomes more like, you know, religious crazies cause wars rather than countries fighting for resources, which has historically been what caused wars. And I'm familiar with that argument. In fact, I quoted part of that argument in my book, What Would Jefferson Do?, which I wrote more than a decade ago, back when I was reading this stuff and thinking like that. But I think that the president is wrong. And I think that the people who are promoting this idea are wrong. I think that you want to reduce tension in the world, encourage people, countries all across the world to behave in their own best interests in ways that aren't, you know, destructive to other countries. But, you know, to trade. So anyway, I appreciate your optimism and I hope you're right.
No, I think he's against this. I don't think he's for it. I think he is against.
And why would he call out Elizabeth Warren?
Well, because he has to have some cred. He went to Nike and shoved it in the most liberal state out there's face. And he went to Nike, of all places in Washington, and said, see how it's done, which we all know is how it is not done.
Right.
And I think that he's trying to get some cred so he can get these Republicans to believe that he's on board, so they will all vote against anything that Obama wants. That's what I think.
Yeah. Lori, I hope you're right, and I'm wrong. I got to move along to other callers, though. Thank you, Lori, for the call. Stephen in Whiteside, Tennessee. You wanted to get back to my debate about the ability right now to buy thousands and thousands of rounds of ammunition anonymously on the internet. Stephen?
Yes.
You're on the air.
I'm from Indiana, actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, but that's okay. And I love to hear your rantings, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had a comment on the lady who was upset about the ID for having to buy ammunition.
Right, but she does want you to have an ID to vote, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm going to quote an episode from The Simpsons there, if that's okay.
Okay.
There's more relevance on that program, I tell you, than there is on a lot of things. Homer goes to buy a gun, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy tells him there's a 10-day waiting period, and Homer's response was, "But I'm mad now."
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, exactly, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Stephen. Thanks for sure. That's a great story. Cliff in Claremore, Oklahoma. Hey, Cliff. Reaganism?
Yes. I'm with you, and believe me, I understand your rant, and I feel you, because it just seems like this is the way it's going. You know, these cities like Baltimore and Detroit, you know, the manufacturing cities. I mean, I listen to Rush Limbaugh once in a while, not because I'm a big fan of his. I just like to listen to what the guy has to say. You know,
sure.
It's so funny, too. You know, it's almost comical in a sense. But he says, well, it's because the policies of the liberal Democrats, and I mean, you know, always hangs that on the Democrats whenever he feels like he needs to spew his venom, and he does it day after day after day.
Yeah.
And I want to see Rush Limbaugh and Fox News, you know, Bill O'Reilly, and that's what I call him, Bill O'Reilly, and Sean Hannity, and all these others have a bad day, and I believe, just like one of the guys that you had spoken with said, you know, that maybe we are going to get over this, and we are going to.
We absolutely have the potential, Cliff. America, we have come back from. I mean, we came back from the Civil War. The whole world held its breath during the Civil War, thinking it was the end of the American Republic. You know, the American experiment, actually, it was referred to in the 1860s. There were only five or six democracies in the world in the 1860s, and they were all looking at us going, oh, my God, you know, is this our fate? We have been through, we've been to hell and back in this country over and over and over again, and every time we bounce back as a better country. And I think, you know, we're going to bounce back from this, too. But, you know, it's just unfortunate that we've got to do these, you know, swings back and forth and back and forth. Cliff, thanks a lot for the call. Mark in Oxnard, California. Hey, Mark.
Hi, how you doing, Tom?
Great. What's up?
I got three small things, and then I want to talk about how to frame TPP. The first thing is we don't have a democracy anymore. We have a corruptocracy.
I agree.
And, yeah, without a doubt. And it should be a central feature of the campaign.
Yeah,
It should be put on
brought
the table
to you by the Supreme Court. There's an article in I think it was over at Daily Beast, Time Magazine. I could be wrong about how the Clinton campaign is struggling to raise the $2 billion she's going to need to win an election. $2 billion, really? That's not democracy. Yeah. That's oligarchy.
And homeless camps, we should call Reaganvilles.
Great. Yeah, like the old Hoovervilles. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think Bernie's campaign slogan should be enough is enough.
Yeah.
Because that's really what it's about.
Yep.
Now, on TPP, what it is it grants supra sovereignty rights, mega rights to mega corporations, which, and it grants them a multinational status. It makes their laws and their rules superior over sovereign nations.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes civilians, citizens, everything, we're just have submissive, subservient, we're subjects to multinational laws, and it makes small businesses and citizens and people, we're just collateral damage now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what TPP is. It grants them super sovereign.
Right. So now is the time to call 202-225-3121 and ask for your member of the House of Representatives. And you're in Oxnard, California. Do you know if you're represented by a Democrat or Republican? in the House?
No, Julia Brownlee, and she's really good.
She's a Democrat. Okay. So yeah, she's probably reliable, but I would call anyway and say, you know, please do not allow this so-called Trade Promotion Authority, this fast track, to go through, and please stop the TPP, the SHAFTA, the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement. Mark, thank you for the call. Thank you very much. It's great to hear from you. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to Sirius. We'll be right back. It is 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Headline in the Financial Times. Minutes from the Federal Reserve show doubts about strength of U.S. recovery. Why would that be? Because we don't make things here anymore. Welcome back. Michael in Brookline, Massachusetts. Hey, Michael, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up? Michael in Brookline? Okay, let's try John in Minneapolis watching Free Speech TV. Hey, John.
Yeah, you know, I don't share the one caller's, I guess, admiration of Ronald Reagan. And I was bullied by his policies at first because, you know, greed and avarice and unbridled capitalism did bring a lot of money initially. But it's exactly what would what you would expect. And then it fizzles out into monopoly and into what we have today, which is a corporate takeover of our very government. I mean, this is where we're at. But I think we should take courage. We should take courage from the civil rights movement. How many people died, you know, without knowing what freedom was like in that hundreds of years struggle to gain some, you know, political ascendancy in this country, and they still have, you know, a long way to go. But I wanted to say that John D'Angelo's quote, you know, you've quoted it before. I think he sums it up in one long sentence what has transpired from Ronald Reagan to today and what we're looking at. And I think it's no exaggeration to say that the police are just practicing. They're practicing on the low-lying fruit of African-American people to, you know, be vicious. And I think that the powers that be, the corporate powers that, you know, are pulling the strings behind all of this, I think that, you know, they're waiting, you know, because they'd like to practice on us. When we finally, you know, as our middle class shrinks and more and more people are disgruntled, they're going to be doing what happened here in Minneapolis with the Teamsters strike in 1933. Little old Lutheran ladies are going to be going downtown serving sandwiches to people battling, literally battling in the street and dying. I think there were about 30 people that died in that skirmish. And that happened not just in this city, it happened all, you know, across the United States. It was the closest that we ever came to, I guess, what you would call a revolution.
Right.
And, you know, I think that that's where we're at, but we have to take courage. Progressive Democrats of America is a good organization. They're trying to build grassroots support. I'm involved in that. You know, just take courage in the words of Gandhi. I mean, I don't know if I'm quoting this correctly, but in the long run, essentially what he said was, in the long run, history proves that, you know, evil men may, you know, rise and seem invincible at for a while, but in the end they always fall. And he did use that word, evil men.
Yeah, he's right. And by the way, if you want support for your conspiracy theory that the corporate overlords are trying to train the police to be brutal against anybody who stands up, look at what happened in New York City. The Occupy movement was going along. Everything was fine. Jamie Dimon makes a $5 million, if my recollection is correct, contribution from his bank, tax-deductible contribution to the Police Benevolent Society in New York, in other words, to the Union Party Fund. And all of a sudden, the cops in New York are pepper spraying and beating the crap out of the protesters. Coincidence? I don't think so. John, I'm, you know, as much as it may sound like a conspiracy theory, I think that there is some cogency, some accuracy to what you're saying. John, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. 10 minutes before the hour, we'll be right back. It is 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk media for the sane among us and me, just fair and only slightly unbalanced. Jerry in Spring Lake, North Carolina. Hey, Jerry, what's on your mind today?
Okay, you know, people will talk about the TTP and what it's going to do with the roles of our sovereignty and everything, but one thing it doesn't do is it doesn't address our trade imbalance. Our trade deficit is a bigger threat than ISA, Russia, or China in every means and aspect.
Agreed. One, in fact, because of our $11 trillion trade deficit, 1/7 of all assets in the United States, according to Congressman Alan Grayson, are now owned by foreign companies or individuals or governments. 1/7 of our country has been sold off to pay, basically to pay down the credit card for purchasing cheap crap from overseas, for lack of a better way to say it. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I think that this is, and you got these deficit hawks. They're all hysterical about the federal budget deficit. The vast majority of that is money that we owe to ourselves, and we have always been able to pay that off. That's not a problem. But our trade deficit, that's not money we owe to ourselves. That's money we owe to China. It's money we owe to Saudi Arabia. It's money we owe to Vietnam. And, you know, it was $51 billion last month. And that, you're absolutely right. That is the biggest threat to the United States right now. I agree. Russell in Hickory Hills, Illinois. Hey, Russell. Thanks for listening to WCPT.
Hey,
what's up?
You know, Tom, you're always talking about words for suckers.
Yeah.
We're the same age. How about hoodwink? My grandma used to say that about used car salesmen. He's trying to hoodwink you into buying that car.
Yeah, you're right.
Pull
that's a good one.
Over your eye.
Yep, that's a good one.
I wanted to get to, you know, I'm surprised Trunka and the other guy off on that. Are they going to start pressuring Hillary about what side of the fence she's on? Because she was home last night. This is her home state. You know she was born here in Illinois.
Yeah.
And the unions are hot about that library now because he's turning his back on them. And let's be honest, this is a firestorm, Illinois. We've got four elections next year. We've got the presidency. We've got two just on the lieutenant governor. And we got your buddy, Kurt, running against Tammy Duckworth.
Hmm. Yeah.
And we got a governor running around here for 4 months screaming about right to work. So what did the Illinois do? They put right to work up and not one Republican voted for it. And then they accused the Democrats of politicizing right to work.
Oh, geez.
I mean, Tom. Yeah.
See, I think all of these things, Russell, all these conflicting cross currents are indicators that we are at an inflection point, a tipping point in this country right now.
Well, because they're hot. The unions are out here because he's got his library here.
Yeah.
And this is more Hillary's state than it is Obama because she was born just north of the O'Hare Field.
Yeah, yeah. People are seriously upset, and the sleeping giant is awakening. To paraphrase Richard Nixon talking about the silent majority. Russell, thank you. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was so inspired by our friend Jeff in Denver. He's just so brilliant.
He is.
Yeah, I wanted to add in one thing here that came to mind. In the 1970s, in that period of time when Jeff was speaking of, when we got so much done, the 1970s, we had more legislation for the disabled than we did in the entire history of the United States. And that doesn't...
Wow.
And that mostly for the disabled, that was the 20th century. There were only maybe two or three pieces of legislation for the disabled in the 19th century. But in the 20th century, it's not like there wasn't any. It started in right after World War One,
right.
And there was a considerable amount through FDR's administration,
right.
And into the 50s and 60s. But the 1970s was just a huge, huge amount of legislation. And that was a period of time where 60% of the 1970s was we had a Republican president. The Bill of Rights for the Disabled, which was the 1973 Rehab Act, Richard Nixon tried to veto it, but he was overridden by the Congress.
Right.
We had such a huge, and as disability is really becomes disability as a continuum of ability to disability, because it's not just you are and then you're not, or you're not. Things like making buses accessible to wheelchairs helps people who maybe can't step up a couple of stairs, an elderly person or anybody who maybe has trouble and is a person who might need a bus.
Mm-hmm.
So So these things help everybody. And that was a time when our Congress and our country had a social conscience.
Yeah.
And that's why we had a Congress who was thinking about stuff like that. And indeed, there were groups advocating for the disabled who were doing things like what Jeff suggests, which is to write laws and say, hey, give it to our Congress and say, hey, this is what we want.
Right. And there was a general belief in the United States, as there had been from the founding of the Republic, that the government can be an agent for good. I mean, Reaganism flipped that on its head. And I think now people are just starting to wake up from this trance of 35 years of Reaganism.
Right. And I think in 1980, the baby boom turned 35 and got this strange mentality that I need to cut my hair and serious up and start thinking about the important things.
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah.
You know, my money.
Yeah.
And then Ronald Reagan tried to dismantle the 1973 Rehab Act. And he also did cut off tens of thousands of people who were on Social Security disability, and there were a half a dozen of those people committed suicide because of that.
Wow.
And these are the things you don't hear about the Reagan administration and all these great moral things. And it is time we wake up and have a social conscience and stop thinking about the almighty buck as being the only thing that matters.
Right.
We have to live together.
Yeah. Yeah, this whole idea that von Mises and Hayek and Milton Friedman have been promoting that if everybody, and Ayn Rand, that if everybody worked in their own selfish best interest, if every corporation did what was only best for them, that somehow the world would be a better place, is just fundamentally wrong. Selfishness is not a high value. Selfishness is one of the seven deadly sins and needs to be recognized as such. Paul, thank you for the call. It's always wonderful to hear from you. And thanks so much for being with us today. What a day. Once again, the phone number for Congress, 202-225-3121. The switchboard is still open. And the TPA, also known as Fast Track, now moves to the House of Representatives. Time to make a call. 202-225-3121. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.